Well, I guess the market yesterday finally decided that that it did not like the hot inflation numbers. Bitcoin sat on a wall at 73,000. Bitcoin had a great fall. Yesterday, we will talk about that as well. Some earnings overnight from Adobe, from Ulta Beauty. It's quad witching. It's a Friday. It's pre-market prep. Let's get it going. Welcome to Benzinga's pre-market prep.
This is a volatile puppy here.
It's all about execution styles and strategies.
All right, good morning to everyone in the chat. EKS, yes, March Madness starts this weekend. Best time of the year. One of the best times of the year, at least. Quad Witch Day, we will be talking about that with none other than the CC Legator at 8:35 a.m. Eastern. Let's go ahead and bring Joel in and see what the indices are doing this morning. Joel, how are we doing on this Friday?
Chop, chop. Up 5.25 handles off the high of the session, 52.23 and a quarter. I don't know. This is going to be a battle, I think, today between the Bulls and the Bears. The buck up marginally at 103. Bonds recovering up a half a point, 119 and a sixth. Crude down 45 cents, 80.81. Gold in the green, up 380, 21.70. 21.71.20. Silver working its way towards 26. The lagger, that's up 36 cents at 25.42. And Bitcoin, after hitting 72,870 in the overnight session, we are now down $1,415 at 68,185. Triple D, we're leaking here. Some 8 o'clock prints mess people up, or just is this kind of day it's gonna be?
Well, lots of sell imbalances just hit the board here. Again, we are options expiration. Those could all flip to buy. We're an hour and a half from the open. But at 8 o'clock Eastern, the NYSE releases its opening imbalances, and you can see, you know, where some stocks, you know, are projected to open, which is really low right now. But again, it takes a couple institutions to come and say, buy them, and then we open higher. So this is always a moving target on these days. But, you know, I don't think that all those sell imbalances coming at 8 o'clock help the market.
Could you give me some examples just so we can illustrate people?
I can give you examples. These numbers, they blow you away, though. Like, okay. I mean, they're not – so they're huge. But again, that's why I'm trying to tell you. On options expiration – I've seen a 500,000 share sell imbalance flip to buy in the last 5 seconds.
Okay.
So really funny things happen with the imbalances on these days. AT&T, 720,000 to sell. You know, Lowe's, 145,000 to sell. Typically at this time in the morning, you see like a few thousand. This is like 10 times bigger than we normally see. But again, there's going to be big option players out here. So they're not all sell imbalance. I see a couple of utility stocks, three of them. NEE, 739,000 to buy, which would make it open up at infinity because there's not that much orders in the book. So all I want to say is there's going to be some excessive volatility off the open. I don't think we can read too much into these imbalances.
Okay, we'll see how they fluctuate during it. We have the quad, which it only happens 4 times a year. So let's get it out of the way. Refers to a date when stock index futures, that would be the March contract, stock index options, stock options, and good old single stock futures. I think we've had one guest on the show, Jerry Parker, that traded them. I don't even know if there's any volume in it, but I guess we still call it Quad Witch. That's today. Also, the spider, if you're looking at the spy, you're like, it's down 227. Well, you get the dividend in your account. They do that as it goes ex-dividend. Do you have the ex-dividend amount, Dennis, for the spider?
Oh, that's a great call. So close, so I can do the quick math for you, because the adjusted close is 513.355. So say 513.35. So that's $1.60 down. So it was $1.60 dividend that it paid, adjusted close. So again, you're not seeing the S&P PMI come in like, whoa, we're down. We're not down. We're actually up. The adjusted close on SPY, 513.35. So you're up about 65 cents right now when you take it ex dividend. This is the only time when you're trading SPY and you're not looking at futures that you could get screwed up. Those, you know, when they have these, obviously, then when it goes ex-dividend. Otherwise, you know, you've got SPY trading overnight and, you know, it works really well. Even with, Like I used to say, well, between, you know, 8 p.m. and 4 a.m., you got to go off futures because that's all you have. But with so many brokers now doing 24-hour trading, SPY's trading around the clock. So you can always get in and out of it. It's obviously, you know, the liquidity there is usually there even at midnight. You have pretty good market in SPY because they're just trading off the futures. So there's really no need for futures other than this, you know, to adjust us.
Abolish
when the SPY goes ex dividend.
Just abolish them. Like, we don't even need them.
We don't need them anymore.
We should delist CME.
Don't need them.
I mean, we don't need them. We don't need oil futures. We don't need agricultural futures.
No, we don't. We really don't.
Okay.
I know you're being sarcastic and I'm being real.
All right, AB, take the reins here.
All right, well, we had some earnings yesterday after the close we got to talk about. Let's start with Adobe because that's one that is, you know, fits into this AI trade story that we've been talking about all year. But like we've talked about on this show, it's not enough in the earnings call to just talk about AI. You have to show through your earnings that the technology is having an immediate impact, an immediate boost on these earnings. And Adobe wasn't able to do that. The company announced some light guidance while the CEO was talking about harnessing the power of generative AI. I mean, Adobe has this suite of all these softwares. You'd think it'd be a very strong AI play. Revenue came in, EPS came in at $4.48, beat the $4.38 estimate. Sales came in and beat as well, slightly $5.18 billion. But again, the light guidance, I think people were expecting a little bit of higher guidance based on this AI trade, and it didn't work out for Adobe. Stock trading down more than 10% this morning.
And we talked about this on the closing print. I specifically said I was very worried about this print with Adobe. It did not set up well because the stock hadn't really sold off. It's kind of just been hanging out. It's kind of been a little bit of a laggard. And then you have the market overall selling off yesterday, and that makes people nervous. So I was very nervous about this going into the print, and it is getting hit here this morning, down $63. It's not a good day to report. I mean, we got nervous again. You know, we're bouncing back a little bit this morning, but it was an ugly market, especially for the IWM yesterday and for a lot of, you know, different stocks as well. Certain stocks had a good day, though. The rotation was still there. Microsoft was up, you know, significantly, had a deal with Oracle, I believe. Also, you had Apple, which is just trading opposite to NVIDIA, it seems like, continuously now. It was having a day because NVIDIA was getting hit. But take it back to Adobe, Joel. Give us some levels here.
500.
Head and shoulders. I didn't like anything about this going into the print.
Yeah, and it did. You know, it came off the all-time high and then made a lower high. People trying to sell into strength, and then boom, they just whacked it. If you feel like you need to own this today, or you have some kind of option positions, I'm just looking at this 500. You got to go to the lower right chart here. Dennis likes, you know, like not a lot of numbers. I mean, just look at that. You bottomed at 500, just under that in September. Of last year, and there's some other weekly lows and make monthly lows in that area off the pre-market low. So that's how I'd be looking. If you don't breach that pre-market low, then you might have to buy this thing up to a little bit of a vacuum. Bottom of yesterday's range, way up there. We won't see that today.
Yeah, and like, you know, we mentioned it yesterday. We did have the, you know, the market kind of sold off. Then we had toward the last 25 minutes, this, you know, a big rally that where the S&P 500 went up more than 0.5%. So it's kind of like, you know, we talked about that. We're going to see some extra volatility today, but we saw some yesterday. I mean, do you think this was people just coming in, buying the dip after being weak all day, saying, okay, the Fed's still going to cut rates 3 times this year. I don't know why everyone's freaking out. I mean, that was a pretty violent move toward the end of the close yesterday.
It is. It's institutional action, AB. So a lot of institutions, and I've talked, you know, a lot of money managers over the years with my work at the CFA Institute, you know, talking to different money managers, they're managing serious amounts of money. They're like, they do a lot. A lot of institutions do everything on the close, because they know the other institutions are going to be there. The liquidity's there. They don't get played around by HFT nearly as much. Although sometimes I think that they think the liquidity is going to be there, and then they drive price maybe to where that shouldn't be. So I don't know if I fully agree with that, but I can tell you money managers like to execute on the close. I think when you see the big down day yesterday of money managers saying, okay, I'm going to put some money to work here, and they put those closing buy orders in there. Obviously, you know, we can see what's happening, you know, through imbalances, through, you know, the floor traders can still see what's happening. And then they run ahead of that to a certain extent. The traders run ahead of that. And that's why, you know, in the last 10 minutes yesterday, we rip up almost 30 handles on the S&P. So it was an impressive up move, an impressive bounce back overall. But, you know, that goes to the question, you know, are we out of the woods here? You know, we still had a pretty hot number. They're talking, you know, June potentially, but now some people are saying the most likelihood of a Fed rate cut is September. So I think when you start adding all that up, you got to start thinking about higher rates for longer. And that's not good for solar, which we should go to right now. You know, I know I'm taking you on a tangent here, but solar got absolutely murdered yesterday, could not catch a bid. ENPH. It's down in the last couple of days. I mean, just even ENPH is down about 12, 14, 15 points, just getting hit. But yesterday, really getting hit. And that was because of the hot inflation data. SEDG, horrible day. First Solar, horrible day. Solar needs lower rates now. They can't wait till September. These companies are hurting. These are all financing plays. We've talked about this, you know, lots of times on the show, but I want to keep pounding in your head because everybody thinks, oh, I'm going to buy some solar stocks here. It's going to be cheap. Well, you know what? Solar is going to be a play, but we need to get more clarity on when the interest rates are going to actually start going down. So when they start going down, that's going to be your time to buy solar. And you want to get ahead of that trade a little bit here. But now we're not talking about June. We're looking more like September after yesterday's data. And that's not good for solar.
Been doing this show too long, because when you go through those stocks, I know exactly what order you're going to go through.
I just went random, but maybe you read my mind better than I read my mind.
You go S-E-N-P-H, then you go S-E-D-G, and then you go First Solar. That's the order that you go in. But go ahead. I'm sorry there.
No, you're good. I was just going to say we've talked about this, that the, you know, higher rates, it's worse for certain companies and sectors than others. And basically, all these companies that need to borrow money, especially in the clean energy space where the industry is still growing, it's not a great time to have rates this high. Not that they're, you know, so high that they're going to, you know, immediately put these companies out of business, but they got to borrow money and it makes it more expensive. And, you know, EVs have been getting hit on this as well all across the board. I mean, you had Fisker, you know, nearing bankruptcy. Nikola got hit yesterday on the Fisker news as well. But Rivian got an upgrade yesterday from Piper Sandler. Piper Sandler raised its price target from $15 to $21, which is more basically an 100% gain from here if it does end up hitting that price target from Piper Sandler. And I mean, I guess the company is basically betting that, or Piper Sandler is basically saying that Rivian will be able to survive this high interest rate cycle until we start to cut. And I mean, I don't know. Like, I think Rivian right here now would be one of the EV plays that I would maybe take a stab at here. But like you said, Dennis, it's just not the right environment for it.
Once bitten, twice shy. Rivian got upgraded 5 days ago, 6 days ago, and the stock popped from $11 to $13.64 in 2 days on that upgrade. And here is an instant replay. We get another upgrade here. So now traders are like, well, I got burned buying that last upgrade here. I'm going to buy the stock, but I'm not buying it up $2 on it. And if you look here, very muted response, only up 3%, you know, and you can say, well, 3% is still pretty good for an upgrade, but not when the last time it went up like 15%. So I think, and maybe we just take off and we blast off and maybe history repeats itself and we go back up to 13, but I don't think we're going to get as big of a buy, you know, people jumping in and buying this thing that we did last week. And I think we also got people caught who bought the upgrade last week and saying, please come up to 12, give me my money back. Please come up to 11.50, give me my money back. Tesla's in a world of hurt. Solar's in a world of hurt. Anything interest rate sensitive is in a world of hurt after yesterday. I think today's a snapback, you know, rally off of this upgrade here. I think the upgrade's a gift. Not saying I'm selling 11.04, you know, but if it gets up and gets silly, maybe get 11.50, I think you're ringing the register here. I don't think I'm sitting around waiting for 13, because I don't think you're getting 13.
told they got thrown a lifeline. I mean, that's basically.
I think so.
Know, that just the Take way it. It. Yep, and the way I'm looking. Also, I'm looking at this. And you know, when it had the upgrade before, and you know, it had the nice move you mentioned 5 days ago. We're not even at yesterday's high, folks. We're not even at 11.59. You mentioned. I know you were just throwing out the 11.50 level. We are 50 cents off yesterday's high. People got stuffed on this thing. So, you know, if in fact, you know, you get a good turn in the market, you take out yesterday's high, there's some room on the upside. But very concerning that, you know, with this upgrade that you're not even at 11.59 for Rivian. So there you go.
Yeah. And in different markets, right, like an upgrade like this from Piper Sandler, $15 to $21. That's a pretty significant upgrade there. You know, I feel like would be popping the stock.
You know, buck.
A buck, yeah. You know, and so, you know, I mean, Rivian. I think Rivian's still interesting. Like I said, I mean, the stock also popped again. We talked about the other upgrade 6 days ago, and then the company announced a new car that people are excited about. I didn't realize when I was looking at this car, because I was like, oh, that is a pretty good looking car, $45,000. That seems like a good price point for an electric SUV. I didn't realize that this car isn't projected to go to the market until 2026. So this is still years down the road. We don't even know if Rivian's going to make it to 2026. Mm. So, you know, again, like proceed with caution, I think, on any name out there that's in this kind of growing industry of clean energy, EVs, solar, you name it. They're struggling right now, and until we get some confirmation that they're out of the woods, then I'm not going to be buying yet. But again, I'm interested. It's on my like interest watch list, not my I gotta buy it watch list.
How the reason I'm not interested is interest rates, and the rates continue. Same thing. This conversation that I just had with solar completely applies to EV as well. Those are the two ground zero: EV and solar. Need lower rates now. They're not getting them now, especially after yesterday. Rallies are to be sold on these stocks, in my opinion.
Yeah, and I wonder how much, the Fed obviously has a lot of things to consider between inflation, the labor market, but I wonder how much, too, the Fed thinks about some of these growing U.S. American companies that like are kind of bleeding right here and need, you know, not that they need their rate cuts right now, but they probably know in the back of their head, okay, well, if we don't cut at some point this year, or even if inflation goes up and we raise, then that would probably put the nail in the coffin for some of these, again, like smaller growing U.S. companies. And I doubt the Fed really wants to do that, but it's, you know, hands might be tied at some point. I
highly doubt it's even come into conversation that solar and EV are hurting because of higher rates, because everything else has been fine. There's been a lot of things that have been perfectly fine. It's such a small portion of the overall market. I don't even think the Fed cares.
Yeah,
I don't
probably
think
more. Probably
if
more
we
about
lose
the
Fisker or Lucid, right. I don't even think the Fed cares at all. If you start losing like major companies, like would they care if they lost Tesla? Yeah, we're not losing Tesla. You know, yeah. Tesla has it figured out. So do they care if we lose Lucid? Do they care if we lose, you know, another, you know, of these 3-4 charging stations or this? Or, charge you know, point, they care yeah. if we even lose a solar company? I don't think so.
Probably more about the regional, probably more about the regional banks they'd be worried about than any solar names or anything like that. All right, well, let's get back.
And they've stabilized. I mean, the regional banks have stabilized. NYCB, which was looking like it was in trouble here, obviously getting the bailout. Coming in, stock is stabilized. So for now, they're okay. Like if you're sitting in the Fed's, you know, just sit like in the Fed's shoes, you know, whoever you want to be, Powell, or you know, pick your poison, but sit there in the room and think about where you are. You know, people are throwing out, let's just say people are throwing out, oh, solar's hurting here. But let's look at the inflation picture here. And we ticked a little bit higher there yesterday. It was a hot number. Me, you. And Aaron, you were shocked too that the market was taking it in stride. We were like ignoring it completely. Like IWM was down only 0.1%. S&P started around. TLT ticked green on it for a second. And I was like, I'm in shock. I'm like, I don't know. You know, it is what it is. I'm like, they're not going to sell off on this number. Well, what we did wrong was didn't consider that at 8:30 in the morning, most of the major money managers aren't even at their desk yet. They're not even there yet at 8:30. They're riding, you know, they're getting
they're in.
There's
limos.
Some money managers
what
there.
What the heck? We're here.
I know. We're here. But we're, you know, but we're addicts. You know, some people are actually doing that, enjoying their family, putting their kids in the school bus. They get to work at 9 o'clock and they're like, that hot number, and we're not trading down on it. Hit the bed, hit the bed, hit the bed. But, and then they hit the bed all day long. And at the end of the day, the S&P didn't look that bad, but the IWM certainly did.
It did.
At the end of the day, IWM had went from 205. It kissed down to 200 before we had that ridiculous end of day rally, which I think is to be sold as well. But money managers were lighting up yesterday. So posing the question to the chat, to you, Aaron, to you, Joel, did we turn yesterday? Did we turn? Like, did the market have, you know, its turning point where we're actually now going to go into a softer period for the next few weeks? Did we turn? I kind of think we did.
Aaron, I'll let you go first.
I think before I call the market turn, and like, I don't know if we're talking about going just from a bullish bias to a bearish bias, but I want to look at the, you know, price action of the leaders today. Like Nvidia closed down more than 3% yesterday. Okay. But we've seen Nvidia close down more than 3% a number of times the past few weeks, and every single time it just bounces right back. So yeah. If Nvidia continues to move lower, if it goes from 880 down to 850 and then we break that 850, then okay, maybe I'm ready to call that market turn. But if Nvidia bounces straight back today, you know, then it's to me looking more just like rotation, people getting out of these, you know, names like that we're talking about that are going to get hurt more by higher interest rates and flock to these names that they know are going to be okay with higher interest rates, your Apples, your Microsofts, your Nvidias. If those all are continuing to be weak, then yeah, I mean, then we can be, then I'll be more open to that idea that, okay, we've hit a turning point in the market. Now things aren't going to be as good for the next few months or whatever it is.
I'm going to be very, as Emily used to say when she was little, very Pacific on this. I'm going to agree with you, Dennis. And the reason is it's the calendar and it's a quad witch. And we've seen major turnings, you know, major reactions off these expirations. A lot of times it's just, I'll get the SPY up here. A lot of times, man, you get a strong close. You open up the next quarter and it just keeps on going. Or sometimes you get a violent reversal. So for me, and I was talking about this number yesterday, it helped me out yesterday. The all-time closing high in the S&P was right near the intraday high is. And I'm sure the spider was the same thing. So it's only 20 handles away. We know the way this market can move. We know we're only 30 handles away from the all-time high. But I think today and Monday, you know, because a lot of the options come off the board on Monday, this is important for the bulls to maintain a bid today, get back up, new all-time closing high and keep going. But it's a turn. It's a quad witch. So I think you got to be on your radar.
I think you're selling stocks into this rally short term. So speaking to your short term traders out there, I'm moving to the sell the rip camp as opposed to buy the dip camp here right now.
Yep.
So we had a nice rip. We're up 40 handles from where we were at 345 yesterday. It's a nice rip, Joel. You know, so I think if you were sitting and you're like throwing up at 3 o'clock yesterday, I think you're using this strength, which we clearly have some strength here right now, to lighten up your positions. I think if you're a long-term investor, I think you're riding this out because I don't think that I'm not calling for a crash. And people are saying, oh, Dennis is calling for a crash. Not calling for a crash. There's big, big difference here. I'm saying we went a long ways. Maybe we have that 5 to 10% correction still in the cards here. Maybe it's kicking around here. Yesterday with the PPI and inflation getting no worries, and certain stocks are going to be fine. You know, I think your tech stocks, and I'm talking about tech, I think a lot of those are actually still fine. Not the growthy Cathie Wood type crap, but, you know, like Microsoft had a great day yesterday. Apple was holding up. You know, there's certain ones that, you know, there's probably just fine. Nvidia is a little lofty, but, you know, it needs a cool off period here too. I still think we're higher here by the end of the year. I don't think this is a generational high here we're seeing or anything like that. I think interest rate cuts are still coming. I just think if you're getting on board with the small caps and saying, oh yeah, these small caps are going to make new highs. Here's the IWM trade in 205. It's going to be 240, you know, within 6 months here, and I'm going to make all this money. I think you're laying off small caps. I don't think you're jumping into the banks. I don't think you're jumping into anything that's interest rate sensitive here because inflation is still obviously prevalent. We see it, and now the data is showing it a little bit more here too. So if interest rates are not going to start going down until September, I don't even want to be long small caps.
No, that's the traders. The traders out there are saying June still. The traders. I love that. I love that on CNBC. The traders. They're still.
Yeah. Who are the traders? Define these traders.
The traders. They got the. And meanwhile, they're out there smacking the bonds. They're out there smacking the TLT. And they're like, oh no, yes, the traders. I mean, come on, give me a break. I mean, I don't know. We got caught off guard by the pivot that Powell made, right? We were like,
sure,
that was a jaw dropper. And I think a lot of people's investment thesis is based on these rates coming down. And I almost was ready. I haven't been in an IWM in like decades. And I was like, I was ready to go. I'm like, this thing is breaking out. It's going over the 50%. This is bid. And I'm like, gosh, man, I'll give it a couple more days. And then a couple more days. And here you're right back at 200. The most, I think the key thing for the IWM is to hold last month's low. I'd say because it had one, two, three, four higher lows for the month. And it had a good sustainable trend. I'm just a little worried here. Last month's low was 199.15. You hit 200 yesterday. So that would be my key for at least for the IWM if you can't hold this $200 area.
If the market's not going to soften up a bit when the inflation data starts to tick higher, then, you know,
what are you going to do?
What are you going to do? You got to go with the trend. But I've got to be aware that we actually did get hit pretty hard yesterday, and Microsoft and Apple hit the safety trade of that. That's what worked.
Google also closed up more than 2.5%.
Google again. So those three stocks really held up the S&P. They made the S&P look like it wasn't so bad. And there was a lot of stocks that were really getting hit hard yesterday. We talked about the solar. We talked about different sectors. You know, KRE got hammered yesterday too. So there was everything in the small caps, interest rate sensitive space that really got. So you had your natural rotation flying into the safety of Apple, the safety of Microsoft, the safety of Google, because we know these companies work in a higher rate environment. They worked in 2021. They worked in 2022. They worked in 2023. They will work in 2024. So the market knows that. So, but I'd be cautious. So all I'm saying is I'm cautious just saying yesterday, oh man, what a dip to buy.
No,
I would say guilty until proven innocent on that, because that wasn't just a sell-off out of nowhere. That was a warranted sell-off. That PPI data was hot. We talked about it. I didn't, you know, short stocks because I was fooled by the pre-market action as well. But when the regular session opened, there was no fooling those money managers. They were coming with their selling shoes on. I think they sell today's rip.
Lipstick on a pig. I mean, that's basically, you know, that was the price action yesterday. And it was because of those. That's why I just couldn't like go crazy on the short cycle. I'm thinking, how far can we go down? And then we kept on going down. And then we caught the reversal at the end of the day. But settling in here nicely in the future, still showing green here. As we speak, still digesting those imbalances. I don't know if they've flipped yet, but we do have some other earnings movers here besides Adobe.
You said lipstick on a pig. I was going to say, speaking of lipstick, we had Ulta Beauty report after the close yesterday, one of the leading retailers in the cosmetics and makeup space. And this stock has just been an absolute monster over the last, I mean, really like 3 years. Hold on 1 second, waiting for these, waiting for my data to load in Benzinga Pro. All right, Ulta trading down more than 8% pre-market. Still waiting for these numbers to hold up. Joel, why don't you give me the chart breakdown?
Wow, they popped this thing up over $600, over 605. And the all-time high was 574.76, but that's history now. It's still price discovery here. You still got a pretty good seller. Well, only 18,000 shares. This one, hard to find support here on the dailies. Man, we'll just go with the 500 number again. No, I'll give you something. No, that we're through that level. 515. That's even really close. I'm going to pass on this one. This has just been a big run up, $520 stock, kind of thin. I mean, I would say resistance at 540. If you get a look at 540, easier to identify resistance and support in Ultra Beauty. How's Elf doing?
So, I was going to ask about that. So, Ulta reported EPS of $8.08, beat by 54 cents, revenue of $3.5 billion, beat by $20 million, but some cautious guidance. The company also talked about increased competition. So, that's something you never want to hear from companies that you're invested in, that the competition's getting a little tighter. And Elf is one of those names where Ulta's like the target of makeup and cosmetics. You go to an Ulta and they have all these different brands there that you can buy. And then Elf, in comparison, is selling directly to like Walgreens and all these drugstores. It's slightly cheaper. So Elf is kind of like the cheaper option compared to going to Ulta, which again hosts all these other different products. But I mean, both of these stocks, Ulta and Elf, because this industry has just been growing so much over the past few years, have been great stocks. But again, Ulta getting a little bit hammered this morning.
It's hard. Like, again, all these stocks didn't set up well because you had some nervous Nellies there. So we talked about, on the closing print, like there was tough print to go into for Adobe, for Ulta, even for Jabil Circuit and HIBB. I mean, they're all down. Like, I mean, you had four, big moves here this morning. Woo. ULTA, Adobe, Jabil, and Hibbett Sports. I mean, they got, dicked here, really, from Dix because, I don't know if that's a pun or not, but I can use it because it's my last name. I can use it because my last name. But they blew it away, Dix. So they set the bar way too high for HIBB, and then HIBB comes in and misses on revenue. You're done. You're in trouble because your direct competitor blew it away. So your bar was higher and then boom, you miss on revenue and you're done. So four stocks all getting smacked this morning. So just looking at four major companies report, Adobe, not that Hibbett Sports is major, but it's one of, it's a Friday where not a lot's reporting here, down 11%. Jabil's down 10%. And then Ulta's down 8%. And then Hibbett Sports is down 12%. They're big moves.
Do you know who gave us Hibbett Sports, like when it was, it might have been even like single digits. I'll have to go to the monthlies. I'm really testing your memory. Aaron, you have
it was
no
Raz.
Raz
was on it.
Before Raz.
Kenny Glick.
But it starts with an R. We haven't had him on the show in a while.
Starts with an R.
Ross Gerber.
I don't think we've ever had Ross on the show.
The Rev.
Oh, was it the Rev?
Yeah.
He liked this one.
Yeah, long time ago. Yep. Long
is
time
the Rev
ago.
Still trading? He got a little bit of legal trouble and stuff. Is he okay?
I haven't spoken to him in a while.
No, I don't know. We did have some smaller economic numbers coming out at 8:30. I don't know how much we care about these. The New York Empire State Manufacturing Index came in at -20.9 versus the -7 estimate. I don't know like really what all that entails, but that seems like a big miss there. Import price index came in line at 0.3%. USA export price index month over month for February came in at 0.8% versus the 0.2% estimate. Again, I don't know if that's really moving the markets. What does the Empire Manufacturing Survey, like, what does that mean?
I don't even know. I'm not an economist. We need Blue here on this for this question. I'm a stock trader that looks at the main numbers, and I don't care or know anything about any of the other numbers. I did take a minor in economics though through university.
If I look at what's due and it's not like CPI, PPI, PPE, like any of the big ones, I just
ignore it.
Yeah, they're not going to be market movers.
It's how much candy they're selling at the Empire State Building.
Okay, so we didn't sell enough. We didn't sell enough candy last
week. We got a few economists in our chat, though. Will saying manufacturers, production.
Will, really?
The lower activity. Talking. I mean, you would think that's like, I feel like that's part of it, too, is we've been kind of getting mixed, as hot as the inflation numbers have been, which I guess we should say that they've been hot, but they haven't been as hot as we've seen in super hot. But then we've also seen some kind of indicators saying that maybe activity is slowing down a little bit. So I think you have this, very mixed bag of data coming out that makes, it's probably confusing for a lot of traders and economists. And so they don't know where the Fed's going. I don't even think the Fed knows where it's going or when exactly it's going to cut rates.
I don't think the Fed knows either. I think that all I think is that With yesterday's data, it became a little less likely that we're cutting in June. That's what the problem is.
And that's exactly what the takeaway should be. It shouldn't be we're not cutting in June. It's we're a little bit less likely not
to cut in June.
You know, yeah, by maybe a few percentage points. All right. Well, it is 8:35 a.m. Eastern. We mentioned it is a quad witch day, so who other to bring on the show than our man CC Legator. Without further ado, let's give CC our special pre-market prep welcome and see what he's been watching when we get back.
CC Legator, founder of Options AI, and always provides me with some great notes of before the show. And CC, did you feel that like we were talking about your notes? Like
you did. You said them better than I did, Joel, a little earlier. Yeah.
Okay. Well, let's just go in order here. We're coming up on something that only happens four times a year. Quad witch expiration. Talk to us about what you're seeing out there. Open interest, volatility, skews, delta, gamma, vega, whatever there is out there.
Row.
Row.
I think, it's interesting. You got a lot of the things you've been describing in the market leading up to this is, this expiration feels a little bit different than, say, the last couple, even when I've been on the show. So the last couple of expirations have been, a lot of options, kind of choking up the market, kind of, you're looking for pins into expiration and things like that. These last 2 weeks leading up to this expiration, it's a very odd situation where the market is basically sideways. The SPX is where it started in March. But if you've been trading, intraday and day to day, this is in an extremely volatile market, right? And you all were talking about it earlier with what you saw in that SPX. You mentioned the rally into the close yesterday, but the sell-off right before that was, down 25, 30 points in like a minute, right, on the SPX. And then it found buyers, and it's done that like, almost every day. We've had some, really, we've had a lot. And yesterday's open was, like a head fake, right, where the SPX moved, 30 points and things like that. So you have this really, you've got this really uneasy backdrop to the market, yet we're kind of going sideways. And what's interesting about that is it is when you look down, that feeling you have, I think, Dennis, I've seen you tweet this out a bunch lately, is, Apple's up, Nvidia's down, Nvidia's up, Apple's down. That is not like anecdotal. It's actually happening. And there is very little correlation in the market right now as we came out of this sort of earnings period. And you're seeing even amidst those, sort of magnificent seven or whatever we're calling them now, you're seeing it in there, right? Like the Tesla's down, Nvidia's, up that day, Apple's down, Microsoft, Microsoft and Google and Apple seem to be trading in a pair, but they're completely different than the Nvidias and the AMDs and all of the world. So that dispersion within the market is real, and it's actually measurable. And you can look at it in like index form. The SIBO puts out an index on dispersion. And so anyway, it's a long story to wrap back around to options expiration, which is this is not a market that's going sideways because of it's like loaded with option gamma. It's actually quite the opposite. And you're seeing the VIX kind of creep up, and we are in a seasonally, high vol, high VIX period. March is one of the months where you typically see higher volatility than, you're coming out of the beginning of the year. There's always a little bit, there's typically a little bit more volatility in this time of year, to a lesser extent than fall, but we're sort of in that period. And you look to this expiration, and you're going to have basically that trend is going to continue into next week, and then next week you have Nvidia's big AI day, right, and the big analyst day, whatever they're calling that, on Monday, and then you have the FOMC midweek, We might be in for some really volatile, even more so than what we've seen in the last couple of, you know, the last week and a half, 2 weeks, over these next couple of days. And it'll be interesting to watch this market into the close, because it could very well, like you all were talking about earlier, do we just take a run at 5,200 today? The options are pricing about a 0.5% move for today. And that would, I think, take us up to like 5,175 or 5,180 or, you know, somewhere in there. But yeah, we could do that. We could snug right up to 5,200. But, you know, the market is looking for leadership, and I think it's really confused. And I think you've got a lot of like sort of weak hands in the market that are like, you know, selling the first. And it might have been that, going back to those days in NVIDIA a couple of weeks ago where you saw that, you know, like 150 point move in NVIDIA back lower. I think that shook out a lot of people and spooked a lot of people. And I think we're going into this expiration with not necessarily people are nervous of, you know, some big correction or anything, because you're not seeing that in the puts or anything like that. But you are seeing it day to day, hour to hour, where it is, you know, people are, those moves of like, you know, a 50 point move in SPX intraday in 15 minutes doesn't seem that weird over the last couple of weeks.
Well, CC, so, you know, we mentioned, I mean, this market, it seems pretty kind of confusing for some people. I mean, some days you mentioned NVIDIA's up, and Apple's down, Apple's up, NVIDIA's down. What does it mean if we start to see all these names moving together?
Well, so that is like, look out, right? So okay, if you started to see, and that would be one of those signs with what you all were talking about earlier, like, you know, did we just shake off higher inflation numbers? Did we just shake up the fact that, you know, that June rate hike or June rate cut, it's basically, you can see it in those Fed fund futures, whatever, where it's down like 15-20% even in the last week of the chances of the Fed cutting in June. If we truly did shake that off in the last couple of days, like you all were talking about earlier, and the higher, you know, those higher numbers and those hotter numbers, the signs would be pretty obvious. You would start to see Apple up on the same day as NVIDIA, right? You would see, because if you look at those over that last, you look at those Google charts and those Apple charts and those Microsoft charts over the last week, they look great all of a sudden, right? And so they're kind of like, they're forming that kind of, you know, consolidation where, you know, who knows what happens next, but if they break out, and then you also started to see that mania come back into those, you know, obviously NVIDIA, but even like the SMCI, I think is getting added to the S&P 500 soon. You start to see those names catch fire again, and you start to see upside call buyers in those, and you start to see Apple and Microsoft move in unison with those. Watch out, right? We could rip. And that those are some of the signs I would be looking for. Right now, it's interesting in those semi names and in those AI names, it's cooled off in the options market. You're not seeing the insane upside call buying that we were seeing like a month ago during that rip in those names. You're not seeing that right now. But that doesn't take, it wouldn't take long for those people to come back. You know, you get one move in NVIDIA back at the highs or above its highs, and those call buyers will come back, and that just, that's that further catapults that kind of stock higher.
So should we wait maybe until these stocks start making new highs at this point in time? Like if you're like, you know, and there's a lot of people saying, oh, I buy, you know, NVIDIA yesterday, I'm coming in here. Should we maybe wait until we get confirmation, you know, that because right now, like what I see on the NVIDIA chart, I'm still long NVIDIA, you know, was the key reversal. We tried to rally a few days ago and then, you know, we didn't get back up there. And now we're leaking here again. Is it prudent to maybe be patient here as opposed to just buying the first dip?
Yeah, well, in that stock in particular, you're going to find out Monday, right? And so it's interesting is that is being priced next week, almost as if it's an earnings. So right now, yeah, I mean, not in an NVIDIA earnings, but it, like a normal stock's earnings. So the expected move for next week in NVIDIA is 8.5%, right? And so with the stock, you know, 880-ish, that is those, that's those highs. It's about 955 to the upside, and it's about 800 to the downside. And that's for next Friday's expiration, right? So I think you're going to know pretty quick. And if that, conference is received well next week, and it's like everybody back on the NVIDIA train, you're going to see this take a run at 5,000 or 1,000. Sorry, because the
I think you're going to find sellers into it. I think, you know, Dennis, you talk a lot about, you know, run ups to an events and stuff. It's not a big run up here. I don't know what they can deliver. I mean, at this, but you know, the thing that's different about the NVIDIA chart now is that, you know, you had the fall from grace. You know, you had that warning candle a few days ago, and then you tried to get back up there. And we were just talking. It just, like, you know, and I told you, Dennis, about that old time closing high price. It got there. Yeah, it got there on Wednesday in the pre-market, and by the end of the show, it was red. So, I mean, there's some overhead supply in these stocks. I don't know if it's being reflected in the option markets or not, but
I can show you, Joel, real quick. Sure, go ahead. Aaron, can you show my screen real quick?
Yep.
Okay, so this is... you know, this overhead supply, this is sort of fascinating. So you can see, I don't know if you can see my screen, but that, you know, that expected move to the upside for next week, 953.60. And that is exactly, if it, you know, options are basically saying it's not getting above that next week, you know, in shorthand, right? So these are the, you know, and then you look at the downside and it's clearly 800, you know, right now the options are saying 805, but you could call that 800 for short and 950 to the upside. And that is, you know, that's next week. Like, I think we're going to know on this thing pretty quickly. And then I guess the question is, if it does disappoint, you know, like, what does that do to the overall market? Do we continue to see a rotation, or is everybody just kind of like, all right, you know, it's the sell in March and go away? You know,
it doesn't seem like we get that anymore, that everything down or everything up. It's all just rotation. Like, every day I look and it's like, you know, I'm half red and half green when I'm looking at my screen of all the stocks up there. And it's like, well, they're selling this, they're going to buy this. Now traders have adjusted for it. I have too. I'm like, when I see something selling off, I'm like, well, what are they buying? I'm like, it's like they just want, you know, the markets to kind of stay, you know, and it's a little steady and dampening volatility. And it's probably ETF effects at work here. But I mean, it used to be like, oh, they're selling stocks off yesterday. They're selling everything, like that PPI number. They were selling a lot of stocks yesterday, but then they bought Apple and they bought Microsoft and they bought Google in a terrible tape. It's like, when do we actually see a market that everything goes red or everything goes green?
Yeah, it is interesting. There's a lot of, I don't know. I think that not only have professional traders obviously become more sophisticated, algos and things like that, I think retail traders have become a lot more sophisticated over the last couple of years. And one of the things with the SPX intraday volatility, I think we're seeing is, you know, we've talked about this in past appearances, but there's a very sophisticated zero DTE trade happening every day. Amongst retail traders are about 40% of the trade or something, which is kind of insane in options. And what's happening in the options market is the durations keep getting shorter and shorter and shorter. What are the most active options? And zero DTE, meaning that day, is massively popular. And then it's also becoming massively more popular in single name stocks, right? And so what you're seeing is that whole, like, you know, buy the dip mentality, which is correct, right? Like, you're going to be right most of the time. And retail traders have caught on to that the last few years. The same sort of behavior, professional sort of really kind of, you know, like intelligent behavior is happening in the options market, where people are like, you know what? You make more money over time selling options, right? And that's what sort of professionals do. And you even have like hedge or ETFs set up to do the same. But what it's doing is all of that kind of imbalance within the options market, with retail piling in as sellers, with ETFs that just basically sell upside calls. And even I've seen some that sell downside puts, you know, like kind of like a wheel strategy. All of that is kind of compressing implied volatility in the options market. And then you sort of, and you're like, all right, well, where would we see it? Are we going to see it in a crash? Are we going to see it? I think it's the kind of stuff you see, that SPX volatility that we're talking about intraday, it's almost entirely the first hour and the last hour, right? Uh-huh. And I think that's a lot of those short-term traders. Like that move yesterday where it kind of like went, tried to take out the lows and then whipped right back up. Yeah. That is in a lot of ways, and I, you know, like we'll just look at the 2-day chart here. Like, look at this move right here, right? This is my hunch is like, look at that. I mean, that was like, what was that, a half an hour? Not wicked. Even.
Yeah, yeah, half a percent on the spot, and then look at half this, an hour.
And this was that open, right? Look at that, that open. I mean, that's, you know, we're talking massive ranges here. And I think a lot of this is options driven, and a lot of that is those short term options. And you know, it's almost like those are stops being triggered, right, within the market. So, you know, that's where I'm seeing this sort of effect is these people are doing very intelligent behavior, but they are all, it is a crowded trade for sure.
CC, I want to ask you, I mean, we've been doing the show for years and we have, you know, all type of investors, you know, some people that are just getting started. We have some very sophisticated investors here. And, you know, over the years, you know, there's been times where, you know, like, oh, I got to hedge my portfolio, you know, and it all depends on your investment horizon, where you're at in life and everything. And I would say, you know, it's worked out, you know, on rare occasions. I mean, COVID was one time, you know, where the timing worked out on it, but like, it's just like, it's so, I mean, are you at the point where, you know, let's say you're over 50, you're over 60. Is it time to start, you know, looking at those kind of strategies, or is it just going to be the same thing? You're going to put these hedges on, you're going to grind, you're going to lose the premium, and then the market's going to drop.
Yeah, it's funny. And we've talked about this before. I am not a big go out and hedge or constantly have a hedge on guy, right? Like, it's exactly the way you describe it. And the way that kind of works is if you imagine just buying puts in, like, you know, the SPY, let's say. Basically, what you're going to do is you're going to, you know, even if you were right, you were wrong at the wrong strike level, right? So SPY will keep going up, and SPX and Qs and everything will go up. And then you finally get your correction and you're like, damn it, my puts are like 10% further, right? Like, they didn't do me any good, right? And so it's really difficult to time those sorts of things. I am a kind of a big fan in hedging individual names, right? Like, so Dennis's Nvidia position, it's like, how do you stay in that thing for the next run? And in those cases, it's like, all right, I'm kind of a fan of that. And I would do it with as cheap as possible and like put spreads. And it's basically like, all right, if Nvidia corrected 25%, what kind of position could I have on that I don't just puke this out, you know, like in frustration, and then stay in for the next rally? So those I kind of agree with. As far as like hedging, you know, sort of, if you were nervous about this market over the next couple of weeks or month or something, I kind of like VIX calls. And the reason is that strike problem you have with like SPY or Qs or a hedge like that is, you know, you could be wrong because the SPY and the SPX could rally 5% and then your puts are too far out of the money. Whereas the VIX is 14 right now. You know, it basically gets as low as like 12, let's say. And if you were looking at just sort of a pure hedge to the market and you really needed it, I guess I should say, that's one place to look, is you go out and you basically buy VIX calls or VIX call spreads over a short period. And I think a lot of more people, and by the way, there's a warning, I would not do it via those ETFs, you know, where it's like they sort of mimic the VIX. Those have a massive decay problem over time. You can just pull up a chart on any one of those sort of vehicles. So I'm talking purely in the actual VIX options, which are options on the VIX futures. those of course have decay just like any other option, but they're much easier to understand, whereas those other things are affected by the daily roll and they're a disaster. And then, oh, somebody said in the comments earlier, with we were talking about the intraday volatility, and somebody mentioned, you know, that's those moves aren't caused by retail traders. That's not the point I was making there. The point is that there's a lot of short gamma at those strikes, you know, and the retail traders are exacerbating that. It's like sort of massive every day. And so what happens is the market finds really quick air pockets, and it sort of triggers all of those stops of all of those people that are sort of short options on those strikes. And that's probably why you see that kind of move yesterday, that it's like down, you know, 25 points in the SPX and then right back up. It's sort of like it's hitting those air pockets.
Just to illustrate, I mean, we just had a 15-point sell-off, and we just looked like, you know, just going to tank into the open, then boom, we're back green on the session. So, that's the way it is. Sometimes you just have to, you know, look at what the market's giving you and take a different approach. CC, we love having you on. I really appreciate it. I'm going to send you an email. I want you on next options expiration too. We're going to make this a monthly thing. And I appreciate you coming on. CC Legator, great name. Options Learn, at Options Learn, if you want to follow him on Twitter. Thanks, CC.
Excellent. Great to see you guys. Thanks.
Thanks, CC.
Have a good Friday. All right, guys, we've got about 4 minutes left. Let us know in the chat if you've got any stocks you want us to check out. I mean, I'm watching Bitcoin a lot today because I think, you know, to our point earlier, Dennis, about is the market turning here? Are we running out of steam? That is kind of one of the big things I've been watching, because I think with Bitcoin, I mean, we've seen it go up, what, 100% in the last 3 months? I mean, anytime historically you have this type of speculation, there's always some pain on the other side. I mean, what, I mean, and Chaykin was talking about it the other day too, with the hockey stick patterns. When in history have we ever had that type of speculation in something and then had some pain, or at least steam coming out of the engine on the other side?
It's usually, you know, a good idea to take profits into the hockey stick pattern. That's usually how this is, because stocks just don't go straight up. Things just don't go up 100% without having corrections usually, you know, in the odd time, I guess they can. But I mean, Bitcoin here has been an incredible move, and I've participated in the majority of this, you know, on decent size too, so much that it's become one of the largest positions in my long-term portfolio. It's funny, like normally I'd be like coming in here, and Joel's like, when are you selling, where are you selling? And I'm like, normally I would be coming in here and selling everything. You know, I'm like, I've got, you know, I've had a pretty good first couple months. This long-term portfolio is blasted off because of, you know, some really good positions, SMCI, NVIDIA, Bitcoin, AMD. I mean, I've had some really good stocks. And, you know, part of me thinks, you know, I took the profits on SMCI and I took half the profits on AMD, and, you know, I haven't taken any of the profits on Bitcoin. Part of me thinks maybe I should just take the profits on everything, sit back, let the dust, you know, let some stocks come in and then rebuy. The problem with me is I never rebuy. So then I just miss out on the bigger moves here. So I'm trying to separate the trading from investing to a certain extent. And that's a fight that we all have in our heads. But I mean, yeah, if you're a trader and you're not taking profits into these hockey stick patterns, you're doing it wrong. Usually these are selling opportunities.
Yeah, and while we're talking about Bitcoin, we have to mention Coinbase. Big red day yesterday, trading down again this morning. You mentioned that Bitcoin's become one of the largest positions in your portfolio. Coinbase has become one of the largest positions in Kathy Wood's portfolio, and she's been taking some profits, like you're saying. She's seeing the hockey stick pattern in Coinbase and has been taking some profits. So we'll have to watch Coinbase, see if it can hold this 220 level. Looks like we're going through some charts from the chat real quick. I saw someone mention Nike. Joel had that pulled up for
second. I did. I had it. It's just, I mean, it's just lower highs and lower lows, you know, since that last earnings report. I mean, you have a little bit of a base. I mean, you have a low, but like, look, you had a low here too, and you popped up to 105 and you came down again. Just the shortest term, I would just look at this last move from 98 to 10, let's call it 103. That's five. I mean, this has got to get a bid here at 100, and it's had it over the last couple of days. So
yeah, and
I like if it could hold 100. Someone asked about Netflix, and Netflix is just consolidating here at the high of the move.
It's blasting off today.
Yeah. What's the news? Oh, I didn't see that.
We got a couple upgrades this week. I know I saw that. I don't know if there's any specific news this morning, but yes. Okay. Ooh. initiated with buy at Bank of America on growth potential. Or no, that's TKO. I wonder why that's showing up.
624.42 right there. If you wanted to sell the all-time high, that's it. That's the only number I'm giving you, one number only. I'm not buying this thing up $11 off of Bank of America upgrade.
No, it wasn't Bank of America. Evercore raised its price target from Netflix from $600 to $640 yesterday. Okay. You had some other, upgrades throughout the week on Netflix. But going back to Nike real quick, we've been talking about how, the big ticket items aren't in right now. But I've been wondering, I've been seeing so much data about people with their credit card bills, and some people are dipping into their retirement accounts and all this stuff. And Nike, I mean, it seems like one of those things that if you're a young person, like kids my age, that maybe money's a little bit tighter right now. A brand new pair of sneakers might be one of the first things that people are looking at. Like, okay, I don't need to buy those $180 shoes anymore. So I've been a little bit worried about Nike. I feel like I've been seeing less and less of like my friend, this is just anecdotal, but my friends posting about, oh, I just bought these new sneakers or on StockX, this and that. 2 years ago, when everyone had so much money, people would love to buy new shoes all the time. So I'm cautious on Nike right now.
It's been in a long-term downtrend here for a while. Really over the last couple of years. And again, since 2021, a lot of things are, but it's like, I mean, you're making a good point, like competition coming here from all over the place, even on, you think about, On Holdings, is that competition for Nike? I mean, other shoes? I think so. I think, golf, to Joel's point, not being as exciting as it was. Think about Tiger, and his relationships and how much that was a Nike propel, like that just drove Nike stock 10, 15 years ago. Wasn't it the Tiger? Remember Tiger's on there and it was Nike was all over him and he was just, driving that brand. I mean, is the brand tarnished? There's a point here. Is it as cool as it was? We don't have Tiger Woods going and just cleaning up with Nike all over.
Yeah, I don't think it is as cool. I mean, you still got LeBron. You still got some other big athletes that carry it. But yeah, I mean, Tiger was a big driver for it.
Tiger was a huge driver for the brand.
The other thing I've kind of had, I haven't like dove deep into the numbers on this, but with how much money these betting companies are bringing in, right? DraftKings, FanDuel, all this stuff. The majority of those customers on these betting sites are like 20 to 35 year old men, right? And if men in that age range are spending X amount of money on these betting apps and losing it, because most people lose money when they bet, that's less money they have to spend at other companies. So I started compiling a list of like companies that are reliant on young men spending, and Nike is one of those. And they've actually been doing pretty poorly. So I wonder if that, and again, it's not like, oh, that, no one has money to buy shoes anymore because they're betting it all away. I'm not saying that, but even a slight decrease percentage wise in the expendable, income being able to spend in these places could have a slight impact on growth in some of these names. So I think it's like an idea at least to think about. Again, that's not like a fully fledged out thesis where I've crunched all the numbers on, but something I've been thinking about. All right. Well, it is 9:03.
Yeah, we're running late. I was going to chime in, but I'm like, I know I'm going to get in trouble here.
and again, that's all anecdotal. It's just from like stuff I hear from my friends. Like I know like, okay, if my buddy a year ago had $1,000 to spend, now 300 of that's going to DraftKings. Yeah. Now they only have $700 to spend.
Maybe.
Yeah. All right.
I think there's less disposable income out there, but it's again, they find the money for the small stuff. It's the big stuff that's really hurting right now.
Yeah, I agree. All right. Well, 9:04. Good week this week on pre-market prep. We'll be back. Well, not all of us will be back on Monday, but at least some of us will be back on Monday.
Joel, I'll be back. I never take vacation.
Joel, Dennis, any final thoughts for us on this quad witching Friday?
Chop. We got a lot of chop. The imbalances are very much to the sell side still. That could change. It's held the S&P down a little bit here. But, things can change very quickly here. S&P is still holding up, but everything's to the sell side. I'm seeing huge sell imbalances here. So maybe stocks open too low relative. There'll be an arbitrage opportunity there. Potentially, a lot of these days are good for arbitrage. But other than that, I think you're going to see some chop. I do expect some selling. I don't think the S&P is going to hold up here today. So I'm a fan of selling the rip here today.
I think it's really important to like regain a bid here and just take out that pre-market high and make a run for yesterday's intraday high. I think just like it just kind of feels like we're just being like a little bit propped up here. And, you know, and if the, you know, you're looking at some of this, you know, Microsoft just went red. If you start to lose some of the leaders, some of the stocks that were strong yesterday that led us out of the abyss, then I'm looking at it, but looking at the downside. But right now, just dancing around unchanged. So Jonathan Corpino will be on. He'll give us a take from the floor on Monday. So shout out to all our Twitter people. We did not get any stocks from you Twitter people. I want stocks on Monday from you guys. So that's it for this week on Pre-Market Prep.
Yep, we do have live trading starting up right now. Make sure to stay tuned. This stream will redirect you there. We'll be watching the open there. This chop should be an interesting day. Smash the like if you haven't already, and we'll see you next week.